Thanks for joining us at the Business Growth Cafe, where each week we select from a menu of topics for a focused discussion with an industry expert to provide insights that can impact your business's growth. With your host, Angelo Ponzi.
I am Angelo Ponzi, your host here at the Business Growth Cafe, and thank you for joining us. Today at the cafe, I'm excited to be speaking with Lauren Fear, founder and president of Loyalty Craft Consulting, to discuss the importance of having a customer-focused strategy for your business and its impact on long-term growth. Lauren, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Angelo.
Yeah, this will be fun. I'm excited.
Me too.
Yeah, this is obviously a topic near and dear to me. Know your customer is one of my blog topics and something I talk about all the time. And unfortunately, disappointed a lot of times when I really dig into it with folks in conversations. So maybe we can solve some of those world's problems today when it comes
Absolutely.
To customer centricity.
Just a few. All right.
If we can get one. Let's just shoot for one. We'll solve one
good.
Today. So before we get started, why don't you tell the audience about yourself and your business?
Well, Loyalty Craft was founded on the passion for helping companies create meaningful customer experiences. You know, we touch a lot of products and services every day, and unfortunately, like you said, come across companies that just don't deliver on that promise. And so helping companies better understand their customer and walk in that customer's shoes, really listen and understand the voice of the customer, measure it, because if you don't measure it, then it's hard to improve, and really craft a strategy around how do we be customer centric. And that comes down to, you know, at the very fundamental heart of it, the people mm-hmm. that are delivering that. And so so much of that work comes down to your culture and the engagement you have with your employees, not just your customer.
Okay. Where does, when you talk to a client and we talk about a customer first strategy, I'm going to use that term.
Sure.
Where does it start? Is it at the top, or is it the marketing guy, or is it the HR people? Who drives this? And then not only drives it, but who owns it?
Right. Well, it does need to be owned from the top. And I'm a huge believer that your leadership team needs to be on board and understand that this is a strategy and a mindset shift. It's really the philosophy of saying, we put our customers first above all else. Now, that doesn't mean it's at the sacrifice of the employees or the shareholders. They all have to work in unison to deliver something special. And if you look at the great companies out there, the Starbucks and the Amazons and the Zappos of the world, you see that. Southwest is a great example too, where the employees are part of that. It can evolve from, you know, starting from marketing, and oftentimes that happens, is that a marketing a CMO may reach out and say, hey, we need help with our customer experience, or an operations person. But it does need to go kind of across the silos in order to work, which means it does need to be led from the top.
Okay. So we're going to talk about silos in a little bit later
sure.
in the show, but there's two questions I always like to get in. And the first is, you have a business. Mm. What keeps you up at night when you think about growing your business?
Sure. Well, what kept me up last night was entirely different from what normally keeps me up. What kept me up last night was figuring out a cake for my son's birthday. I have to give a shout out to my 8-year-old Lucas. He turned 8 today.
There you go. Congratulations, Lucas.
But normally what keeps me up in thinking about business growth is, and I think it is actually having children watching, you know, Mom the Entrepreneur, making sure that work has meaning and has lasting impact in mm-hmm. the organizations I serve. You know, I don't want it to be about coming in and you know, offering a solution to a problem and then just leaving. It really has to be, how can we make this sustainable? And because it is so human-centric, how are we impacting the lives of those around us? And so for me, the meaning comes from, and the deep, deep purpose in this work comes from knowing that I'm affecting people. And so making sure that I do that with grace and taking the responsibility of ensuring that we're going to deliver something better and that I can help companies get there.
I love that. You know, sustainability is so important. And and so many times when we think about external strategies, I'm using the broad we. I never do this, by the way. But we tend to forget about the internal audiences
right.
and making sure that, you said silos earlier on, making sure that everyone in the organization understands that strategy and delivers
right.
on that brand promise.
Right. Right. And I mean, understanding the consequences of, if we're going to make a change here, how does it affect the teams behind the scenes that are going to make this happen? And I use Disney a lot in the work that I do in kind of using that example of the fact that at Disney, you've got this onstage experience. And so everyone's, you know, an actor in serving the customer, but behind the scenes, what's actually happening? And so are you burdening employees? And so when you do any kind of journey mapping and figuring out what are those moments that have, you know, great impact in a positive way on a customer, well, what's happening behind the scenes with the team and the tools and the processes so that this happens so seamlessly?
Yeah, absolutely. It's like the duck on the water, right? There's a lot of feet are moving really fast, but it looks very calm on the outside.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. And hopefully as those feet move, you're not burning out.
Yeah,
so
there you
how
go.
Do you make sure you don't burn out the duck?
Okay. The second question that I like to ask is, what is the best piece of business advice you've ever received? And if it's different than what you give, then tell me what you give.
Yeah, and I'm glad I had a little time to think about this. So thanks for sharing those questions in advance. I would say that the best advice actually comes from Steve Jobs, and it was to start with the customer and work backwards rather than letting technology be the starting point. And coming from a technologist and a personal hero of mine, those words really meant a lot in terms of how I thought about it. And I spent 20 years in technology as well. So okay. Starting from when I was, when I was young, I used to go with my father, and he sold personal computers at a brick and mortar store. And I would join him and sell with him. And so I was this 12-year-old selling the IBM PS2 to families who would come in, and recognizing that, you know, the family didn't want to be sold on how to use DOS prompts and Lotus and WordPerfect, but that they needed to see that there is this connection between my father and I, and that, you know, even a 12-year-old girl can use this thing, so why can't we too? And so the stories that came out of that and the connection, it definitely, you know, permeated through the work that I've continued to do in terms of making sure that it's not the technology first, it's the customer.
Sure.
It's different from the advice that I give, which actually has to do with my own personal journey into entrepreneurship. I had always worked for larger companies, and so when I decided about 4 years ago to kind of go off on my own and create this new path for myself, I think a lot of things held me back, and I had all these reasons, and I think a lot of women do this, where we say, oh, well, I need this certification, and I need this background, and I need to have all these things, and we let that hold us back in terms of our own value of our worth. And so the first thing I say is, hey, write all those things down, use some sticky notes, and write down every single thing that's you're afraid of or that might be holding you back, and then put it into basically two columns. One is complete BS. This is something that's holding us back, but it shouldn't be. That it's not, you know, it's what's in our head, but it's not the reality. And then there might be some things we actually do need to work on. And so create a plan for how am I going to do that? What's my timeline? And then let's go out and just go for it. So being able to just go for it and focus on achieving those dreams that we have is so important to me, and the advice I like to share.
Oh, that's fantastic. And I'm sure that's great advice for the listeners. When we talk about customer experience, because really that's what we're trying to do, right? The change, as opposed to customer service, we're really looking at driving that experience. In an article I was reading, it said that, you know, customer experience realignment for a company really involves dramatic changes in three areas: culture, operations, and technology.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that?
So I think, yes, I
okay.
definitely agree with that. I think that the fourth is around leadership. And knowing that if your leadership isn't on board with this and understand that the alignment that they have has to drive a lot of that cultural change in the communication, that comes first. So I would definitely add that. I think that's about the strategy that you have as a company, the governance you put in place, the accountability mm-hmm. of everyone. And so that fourth pillar has to be there. And around culture, it is about the stories you have. It's about how you communicate with people, how you celebrate when you've done this well. From an operations perspective, it's about breaking down the journey and every touch point you have with the customer. From a technology perspective, it's very much the same thing about how do you enable an omni-channel experience, because customers do expect more. Customer expectations are constantly evolving.
Sure.
And so how do you connect with them in their best mode of communication, their best way of connecting? So they all definitely are important. But yeah, I would say add leadership to that puzzle.
Yeah, okay. Is there a greater emphasis on one than the other?
Well, I mean, it's a people business, first and foremost. And I think the work that we do, like I said, is very human-centric. So thinking about how are you shifting your culture and beliefs as an organization around a customer-first strategy? How do you really think about who is this customer? How do you listen to them? How do you listen with empathy too? Mm-hmm. So whether that be bringing in customers to talk to you about the experience they're having, or doing ethnographic research and going home. I love the example of Intuit. One thing Intuit does, which I think is amazing, is that every employee has to do a follow me home. They literally go into the home of two customers each year. Every employee does this to find out how do they use their software. And so they research it. And I think we all have to be researchers of our products and services and wear that hat and really understand them. Because that certainly gives every employee much more empathy. So they get thousands and thousands of interviews every year about what their customers think of them, which really helps them evolve.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I worked for a while in the action sports industry, a little while, about 13 years. And some of the things we used to do as well is actually go and visit, you know, I'll pick on skateboarders and go see what was in their closet, right?
Sure.
What kind of clothes did they have versus what they wore in the street when they were skating versus what they had. So I'm a big believer, again, this immersiveness into the consumer to really understand the needs, motivations, because ultimately that's what really drives everything else. Talk about, you mentioned journey a couple times. Mm. I'm gonna segue right over to journey mapping and personas.
Yeah.
So I wrote down here, chicken or the egg? Mm. What comes first?
So persona for me comes first. And for those listeners who aren't quite familiar with these terms, in the customer experience world, this is the bread and butter of us understanding the customer and doing what's called customer design. A persona is a fictional characterization of a customer, really an ideal customer. And you'll have 3 to 5 of these in any business. I like starting with that persona because then you're really getting in the head of, in the heart and mind of really who is this person and what's their day like and what tools do they use, what brands do they like. What are their goals? What are their pain points? Once you do that, then you build a journey around that person. And so I love starting with the person first. And then the journey is, what are the actions that they're doing as they interact with your company? What are the thoughts that they have as they do so? So you're really getting in, I'd say that's really empathetic in terms of what are they saying? Mm-hmm. What are they saying in their head? And then what are they feeling as well? So the journey map really ties to who is this person? How do they interact with us as a brand? What moments are meaningful? And when we see in the journey map that, oh, we just really frustrated a customer. We put them on hold for, you know, this long. How do we do that? When I work with teams and we map out their experience, and sometimes they kind of recognize, oh wow, we just put our customer through something that we wouldn't want, you know, we wouldn't want our mom to have to deal with. So why are we doing
sure,
this?
Sure, sure. So, now you mentioned a fictional characterization of the client, but we're not sitting here and with an empty pad and just kind of writing notes because we feel like that's what our ideal customer is, right? We're basing that off of some market research or previous interactions, and we're trying to build that foundation of, I used to look at qualitative and quantitative. I used to say, oh, my quantitative is the skeleton, really, the nuts and bolts. And then we're going to do the qual. We're going to actually start to put the character to this individual.
Well, it's so important to move away from just demographics. And so the data that you have as a company, you've hopefully been collecting tons of data. and so that's telling you one thing. It's telling you, okay, maybe your target customer is a woman who's 25 to 35. Okay, that's great. But that doesn't really get me empathetic about her.
Sure.
So, you know, what age is she exactly? What is her name? Does she have a dog? What does she do in a day? What kind of coffee does she drink? Like, I want to know much, much more about her because then I can connect with her. Mm-hmm. And so that's why that's so important, is to go beyond just the generalized data. And yes, you're going to come up with some hypothesis about who that is. But in reality, you may have just made up someone who doesn't exist, or that might not really be your customer. And so it's so important to go out and actually talk to that person and find out, did the persona we just create actually match real customers, or do we create someone who's basically a lookalike of us?
Sure.
Or is maybe a little too close to a real person, and so we've got to be cautious about all those things.
And these are not, and you mentioned typically typical company will have 3 or 4 or 5. Mm. And that's what I always say, because you have to, depends on if you're somebody, I'll pick on a B2B world, right? You've got someone who's going to start the project, evaluate the project, write the checks for the project, right? So those all become
different.
Yeah, a
few more in B2B. Yeah. Just B2B is a little more complex, I would say, because you do have relationships at different levels within an organization, and you have to think about who the stakeholders are, who's the sponsor, who you work with day to day. They may be very, very different.
Okay.
Different goals.
Where do companies, in your experience, typically fail? when it comes to implementing these? Do they just give up because it's extra work, or they don't really invest the time, or it's a one and done and they think, well, I did it, I don't have to do it again?
Yes. I've seen all of that.
All those.
Okay. Unfortunately, I've seen all of it. But I would say most commonly, I think companies start with that intention, but they treat it as a project and not as a long-term transformation of their organization. So they miss the leadership and the culture aspect of it. So, you know, I'll ask, oh, have you done journey mapping? And it's like, well, yeah, but they're covered in dust over on that shelf over there. And it's, you know, for me, it's how do you make it just part of every day.
Sure.
And so whether you can journey map wallpaper around your organization and get people constantly attached to this, creating champions in the organization. And so having a customer advisory board that's constantly, you know, going out and helping people do that research. But it has to be cross-functional because you can kill it in a silo. Mm-hmm. If you're not careful, or creating a separate silo. It's got to go kind of cross-functional and have the buy-in from the top.
And I think the key thing I heard is a champion. Mm. In next couple of weeks, I'm going to be doing a show on competitive intelligence, establishing a competitive intelligence program. Yep. And that's one of my suggestions, or highly my recommendations,
sure,
is you have to have someone who's going to champion it every day, because it's not a project.
Right.
It is a strategy that you're implementing into your business.
Exactly.
Same thing with what we're talking about.
Yeah.
It's not a project. It's a strategy that you're really implementing, just like any other strategy.
Right. And it's not simply enough to just have a head of customer experience, some person you appoint into this role and have them sit in their own corner office. It's really about how do you build an organization around this idea. So, and I think that having a chief customer officer is wonderful if they're given the ability to really do this outside of, you know, doing it within a silo or a project, but doing it across the organization.
Okay. Do you find that companies are actually putting people in place in that role, or it's like, well, you're the marketing guy, you're now also the head of experience, or you're HR, and it's
I'm
kind of an add-on?
I'm always curious where they come from when someone gets promoted into this new role, and it's become kind of a hot trend to see, oh, now we're having these VPs of customer experience or chief customer officer, and sometimes they come from operations or marketing. But often it's a team of one. And mm-hmm. it's, well, where's the budget coming from? And,
sure.
and who are you stealing this from? Because it is so new. I think this is evolving in the customer experience practice as a whole. But I do think that person needs more support, often needs a lot of data at their
sure.
fingertips. So how can they work? And that's so important. The responsibilities that person is taking on are really kind of chief collaborator.
Okay. And so, again, for the audience, this is an investment. It's not. Really shouldn't look at it as an expense, but an investment in the company's future. And it needs
right.
a budget, needs its own budget.
Right.
Not
and the business
point.
Case behind it is all about growth.
Right.
I mean, fundamentally, you're going to create, you know, new relationships with customers you don't have, and you're going to retain the ones that, you know, that you're losing. And that's so essential. And the way we measure it has to be tied to mm-hmm. what KPIs are we putting in here so that we know we've got a better lifetime value within our customer, that we're retaining them over time. It's exciting, you know, when we can see that kind of impact and measure it.
Sure. You've mentioned this a couple times, so I'm going to go to it because it's one of my questions. Measurement. How does an organization, I mean, we always struggle. You know, they say, oh, marketing's not measurable, but there's ways to measure it. It might not be a specific dollar or whatever it happens to be, but
right.
so how does someone measure the impact of this program, customer experience program?
Right. Well, there's so many measures, and I think you can quickly boil the ocean if you're not careful. So you have to kind of first recognize, what are you trying to solve? You know, do you want to deepen the relationship you have with existing customers? Do you need to attract new customers? What are you really looking to do with the program? And so what are the meaningful aspects of the customer design that we're going to work on? So perhaps it's retaining customers you have, deepening that relationship. Okay, so how are we shifting culturally? What kind of training are we putting in place? We'll measure it starting from what is our current attrition rate? What do our customers think about us? So
mm-hmm.
when we do voice of the customer work and we research and survey and get feedback, what's the net promoter score? I mean, there's plenty of metrics out there. What's the customer effort score? Are they expecting to have to put in as much effort to work with us as we've made them go through?
Sure.
And then when we impact the journey, when we shift something in that customer journey, then let's measure the outcome. Did we make that customer's experience better? And how did that turn into true loyalty?
Okay. All right. So lots of different measurements. It's just thinking about them up front and putting them in place.
Right.
As opposed to after the effect.
Yeah. Yeah. You've got to start somewhere. You've got to benchmark it. But really benchmark around what's the problem you're trying to solve rather than just throwing out, you know,
a bunch of different
different wasteful metrics.
So tell me a story. All right. We're storytellers. You're going to tell me a story about one that you've worked with, or just another example that you know of that implemented a customer-first strategy and it really had an impact on their business, and kind of how did that look and go?
Yeah, so I may go a little broader on you than what you've asked, but
okay.
I actually like looking at it from an industry perspective, and I've done a lot of work in the animal health industry.
Okay.
So pets are, you know, for many people, they're family.
Yeah, I have two extra boys in my family.
Of course, I've got an extra girl, my only girl, and the animal health industry is booming. And you know, if you think of all the products and services that serve pets out there, there's myriad of them. The veterinarian should be at the heart of that experience because that's a trusted source of information. However, you're only going to the vet, hopefully your pets are healthy, but most people only go to the vet 1.4 times a year. And so how do you connect to a veterinarian when you're never actually in their office? And so what's really special about kind of the work I've gotten to do in the animal health industry, everything from working with pharmaceutical companies to home delivery to nutrition and retail, it's about thinking about how can you bring the voice of the veterinarian to the forefront, and connecting with consumers in meaningful ways, even though they're not physically there. And so you have to think of an omnichannel experience. And there's so many great technology solutions in there and in that industry that are coming to the forefront now because they're recognizing that this is B2B2C, right? If you think of the businesses actually trying to connect with the veterinarian who they're trying to make a salesperson, but guess what? Vets aren't salespeople.
Yeah,
and so how do you create something that's meaningful for a veterinarian to be able to offer to their consumers in new and unique ways that get them to be at the forefront of that being the trusted source? So that's been a really fun one to be able to play in. And certainly an evolving industry that's growing rapidly.
Wow, that's fantastic. Do you have a story of one that didn't turn out so well?
I do. I say that I work with everything from pharmaceuticals to phones to forklifts. So on the phone side, I had opportunity to work with Nokia.
Okay.
And, you know, I think that's an example where Nokia was a little bit late to the game in, you know, evolving from they love their hardware and, you know, the fact that you could type into a keyboard and they were connected to the users they did have without thinking about longer term, how do we build a user experience? How do we focus on software? And so they let others come before them and unfortunately didn't realize, you know, they thought their brand had enough relevance to keep them through that that storm, to weather the storm, but it didn't. So I think that's a pretty interesting example of a company that neglected their user experience, and it hurt them.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there's probably a lot of case studies when it comes to neglect of the
airline
user.
Industry is a great one, too.
Yeah.
There's plenty.
Yeah, my wife was just recently on a flight, and they were serving meals, and her boss said to her, well, didn't you pre-order your meal? You have to pre-order it now. And it's like, I'm sorry, what?
What?
it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, companies stumble on for the sake of efficiency at not building this inappropriately. So certainly we've, as we think of, you know, that's the thing. We want to be faster and we want to be more efficient. But what do we sacrifice as a result of that?
Yeah, exactly. And the airline industry, unfortunately, has been sacrificing a lot, in my opinion. I'm going to go on a trip and I'm concerned about my baggage going to cost me for an extra pound, another $100. Anyway, we are coming to an end.
Sure.
So one last final question. Two recommendations for the listeners thinking about implementing in this program.
Listen first is one of them, which really means start by trying to understand who is your customer and what's meaningful to them, going out and getting feedback, really asking those questions. And it has to be part of the employee experience as well. So appointing your employees to go do that, I think, is even more meaningful because that makes them even more accountable when they've heard from their customers what they love and what they don't.
Mm-hmm.
It makes them eager to try to change that. So allowing them to be champions of it, is kind of the second piece of it. But first, listen, then react.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Why don't you tell the listeners how they can contact you and learn more about your business?
Thanks, Angelo. Yeah, www.loyaltycraft.com. You can learn all about what we do. We're also on LinkedIn. You can find us at Loyalty Craft or Lauren Fear. We're on Instagram and Twitter as well.
So. All right. Well, thank you so much. It's been a really interesting conversation, and I'm hoping that the listeners definitely got some value out of it, and I'm sure they did. Thank you again for joining us at the Cafe today. You can find out more about me, read my blogs, or view my show videos at theponzigroup.com, or connect with me on LinkedIn as well. I think everybody is on LinkedIn, almost everybody. And if your business is in need of a CMO, but you're not ready for a full-time person yet, connect with me. I'd welcome the opportunity to explore the benefits of using a fractional CMO. You can also subscribe to this show at thebusinessgrowthcafe.com or on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Spreaker, and many other platforms coming to you from around the world. Join me next week for lunch at the Business Growth Cafe. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's discussion at the Business Growth Cafe with your host, Angelo Ponzi. Take a moment to subscribe to this podcast and visit our website at www.businessgrowthcafe.com. Read Angelo Ponzi's blogs at www.theponzigroup.com.